go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up.
Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 122 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. I woke up this morning, found myself an erection. Whoa, the B-Man. I had quite an erection this morning in my groin area because that's where the erections for the male genitalia is. Mine named Mr. Perfect. Got to give your genitalia a proper surname. But this erection, I didn't know what I was going to talk about today, but it's been on my mind all day, this erection, because it was such a powerful stiffy, the type of stiffy that a 17-year-old healthy all-American American would get, the one I haven't gotten in probably 2 decades. Now, they say a good sign of health for men in America, that is, and I assume all around the world. I can only speak for cut wieners. I am circumcised. I am thankful that my parents decided to get me circumcised, but that's another topic for another episode of Verbal Graffiti. But for all of you that are cut, circumcised, they say the medical, the CDC says if you wake up with an erection, that is a sign that you are in good health as a man, that is. And wow, I must be the healthiest American in the country because this morning, it was one of those erections where I had to wait 20 minutes to get out of bed and use the restroom, the toilet, to take a piss. Because when you wake up from a deep sleep, of course, you always got to take a pee. But it was pressing up against my boxer briefs. I sleep in boxer briefs. That may be too much information, TMI. But hey, we're 122 episodes in to too much TMI on Verbal Graffiti. So why stop now? I had 8 viewers of last episode that we put out here at Verbal Graffiti. But there I was in bed. It must have been 6 a.m. It was so powerful. It was so staggering, all right? It was so upright that it woke me from my sleep. My erection is what woke me up. It was throbbing so much that it was a discomfort that I had. It was, I got to get up and pee and let this erection simmer down or else we might have a problem. Might have to go to the ER ASAP. But I know I was thinking, I was laying there in bed. I'm like, why do I have such a huge erection? I mean, I wanked it less than 48 hours ago. I haven't taken Cialis, which I take for shits and giggles. Haven't taken that in a few days. And the only, it's not that my semen retention. So it must be that I'm working out more. I'm not doing any serious weightlifting. I'm just lifting, that is. Learn how to speak, B-Man. Pronunciate your words. Stop thinking about your erection so much. Yeah, I've been lifting, nothing serious, 25-pound dumbbells, you know, bench press, curls, squats. I'm not doing plates. I'm not stacking plates on top of plates where the bar bends. I'm just trying to get the slightest bit of muscle. And I have heard, and I believe this comes from the CDC, so you know it must be truthful, that lifting things that are heavy in general does increase your testosterone. And now, I'm proof positive because I have been lifting weights the last 2 weeks. Again, not heavy weights, but heavy for me, the B-Man. And my erection this morning, it had more definition than any muscle that I've certainly gained the last 2 weeks. So I guess I have to continue lifting because I was so proud of this erection that, it was still upright.
to the point where it's like, I have to take a piss. The bee man, I got to take a piss. So I went to the bathroom. I put my robe on to hide my erection, even though I live alone. So I don't know why I was hiding it. But it was one of those morning pisses where, like, I had to take the top of Mr. Perfect, my wiener, and, like, press him downward and do a thing where, like, I had to point, literally, like, point, like, it was actually, it was painful to push the erection down so that my urethra, whichever, you know, the hole, the pee hole, was pointed towards the toilet water, which we talked about in last episode, episode 121. Check it out. We talked about wanking off into a toilet, but right now, episode 122, the B-Man and all of us at Verbal Graffiti, we're discussing peeing into toilet water while you have an erection, that morning erection, wood, that is. So I had to, like, do a thing where I almost, like, I was leaning over the toilet, like, my chest, and then I had to point Mr. Perfect downward to get that stream going into the toilet water. It's my nose. And then I went back to sleep because the B-Man, I am a bum. I am a procrastinator. I do not like early mornings. Again, this was around 6, 7 a.m. So I went back to sleep, woke up again 10 a.m. with an erection that was still not... not as hard or as profound as my first erection that I had gotten at 6:30 a.m. yesterday morning, or this morning, that is. But it was still, I would say it's top 10 morning erections I've gotten this year so far, and it is early April. So, I mean, again, you think about that. Been lifting weights for 2 weeks. And one Sunday morning, I got two top 10 morning woods that I've gotten so far in 2025. If that is not an advertisement for getting out there and hitting the gym and lifting those 25-pound dumbbells, I don't know what is. So if you're a Chad, if you're a John, if you're just a guy who's you know, you're not waking up with morning wood anymore, maybe you don't need to take Cialis. All right? Maybe you don't need a semen retention. Maybe you just need to find a heavy stone or rock in your yard or in the woods and lift that 10 times and just... it was almost... you know, this Woody that the B-Man had with Mr. Perfect this morning, it could have caused international incidents. I don't think... it was so upright and so stiff that my erection was almost touching the Canadian border. And I live here in Connecticut. So that tells you how long-lasting and how much blood was just pumping inside of Mr. Perfect. It was... I'm very proud of myself. I didn't know I had that. I didn't even know I was capable of pushing that much blood into Mr. Perfect, but apparently I am. So a tip of my penis to my penis. Also, my buddy Cheese, he just sent me a DM via Instagram about did Kia Boys... again, it's springtime. They're back in New Haven. They're back in Connecticut. So those Connecticut Kia boys, be on the lookout for them. So if you're walking on the sidewalk with your wife, make sure your wife is between your wife and the road. So if the Kia boy, if they come up on the curb, you get hit and your wife survives. Don't know why we're giving up our lives for our wives' lives, but, you know, our fathers taught us to do that, so we gotta do it, because that's how our fathers taught us to do it. But it's funny. So my buddy Cheese, we're rambling. I mean, man, we'll get to what we found on Reddit, but it's in my mind, and I want to talk about it before, you know, I don't have blood in my head right now because it was all in my head down here this morning, and it's still trying to, you know, find its way to the rest of my body 12 hours later. Uh-huh. All right. So anyway, my buddy Cheese sends me, I don't know, about how the Kia boys are back in Connecticut with video of the Kia boys wilding out with the car, the Kias that they've stolen off the roads of New Haven. And then the post after that, or the story after that, was a list of new cops that have, you know, they passed the test and now they're officially cops in New Haven. And about of the six, I believe I counted, five of them were babes, females. We politely call them babes here on Verbal Graffiti. And again, maybe this is my misogyny coming out of the B-man. But I don't take female police officers seriously. When I see them, it conjures up images of, role playing. It's like, oh, come on, you're not a real cop. Like, you're fighting crime, or are you just trying to turn the B-man on? Like, honestly, when I see a female cop dressed up, you know, in the black and the blue, and she has the hat on, the cap, and then she has, like, the bun, right? Because no female cops have their hair done. They put it in a bun, so they have the hat with the bun, the hair bun sticking out the back, and they have, usually female cops, they're a little curvy, they're busty, so they have their pants tucked in, or sorry, their top, the cop outfit tucked into their slacks, which you don't see much of that today. Not many people tuck in their clothing, and there's just something about the female dressed as a cop that turns me on. So how can I take your authority seriously? And before you go, Brian, you're a misogynist. You're just, you can't say that. Well, the guys who are the ticket fairies that write all the parking tickets, when I see a guy dressed up in the meter outfit, and he's writing a ticket and putting it on the windshield, like, I don't take that guy seriously either. Like, that's a job for a female authority figure. And the police officer, that is a job for a male authority figure. Maybe I'm a traditionalist. Maybe I'm a sexist. Maybe I'm a misogynist. But there's something about a female cop. And when, if the shit goes down, like, if there's a real domestic violence, there's an emergency, how is that female cop, how is she going to be able to diffuse the situation? Same thing with the female security officers I talked about maybe a month ago. I don't know. But who the fuck am I? Who the fuck is the B-man? Like, look at these arms. Look at these noodle arms. Like, I couldn't be able to stop a raging husband who's on TRT and drunk and drugs, and he's doing whippets and he's beating his wife. I wouldn't be able to stop him or pull him off of her. I'm fucking 160 pounds. Most of these female cops, they weigh more than I do. But again, am I the only one? Am I the only one who sees a female cop walk and go, whoa, she's super hot. Need to cover up my private part. And then you think in your head, you go, she can't. She's not going to stop a riot that takes place in the streets, or if there's a drug dealer running. All right, before I get taken off the internet, let's keep it going along. Female cops, reach out to me, 203-500-7816. All right, this comes from the subreddit, Reddit for Grownups. Get off my pool. Just at the gym, swimming laps in a 20 by 40 pool. That's quality size right there. And a woman comes in, hopefully not a cop, again, and unclips the rope so she can walk across the pool in my lane. And again, when she gets out of the pool, refuses to replace the rope even when I ask her, and relaxes, eyes closed, in the hot tub. So when I get out, I turn the timer down to 1 minute and kick her flip-flops under the furniture into the corner. I thought I was past that behavior. I'm 76. I have your back, right? I'm doing the backstroke. I have your back in this incident. I believe you behaved admirably, maybe a bit childish, but I'm not going to fault you for your actions. I don't know much about life, right? I am a failure, but I do know how to get out of altercations and how to avoid altercations. And There are few things in life more sacred than an AARP member and his time in the pool at his fitness center. We all know that if you see an elderly man or lady doing laps at the pool at LA Fitness Center, I don't care if you're Michael Phelps or Missy Franklin training for the Olympics. You let that old bag be. You let him or her do her laps before you interrupt and take over that lane or that area of the pool. And it goes for laps. It goes for those old hags doing aerobics in the pool in the shallow end. Like, when you see an old hack, an old bag, elderly person, retired, doing stuff in the fitness center pool, you let that person be. Could you start fucking with his space? And that's bad karma. That's going to come back to bite you. Like, the fact that this lady, like, you were doing laps in the pool, and she came by, she unhooked, like, the plastic line dividers, and then didn't put it back, right there. That's the type of person at the grocery store who gets the groceries and puts the cart right by her car and leaves and doesn't bring it back to the stand. This is a person that needs to go to the guillotine, have their head chopped off, and put outside the front of the fitness center. I don't think this fitness center is going to go to that level where they're going to execute this person who did this to you. I would, but again, I am not fond of female cops. So, I'm living in my own little fantasy eye for an eye type society. But this encounter that you had, everything you did was within reason, right? Like, she fucked with your lane, right? So you fucked with her comfort, eye for an eye. Eye for an eye. We need more of that in this society. And you could blame this 76-year-old for being childish, for putting the timer down to 1 minute, flipping her flip-flops in the corner of the pool. But really, can you blame him? Like, I can't blame him. What other tactic can he do? Right, he's 76, so his bones, his muscles are brittle. He can't start throwing haymakers at the lady because he'd probably break a bone. So he can't use physical force. And he's elderly. So, really all he has in his spiteful tool belt is passive aggressiveness. And I think this is the perfect way to get your message across is, yeah, If you walk across my lane or swim across my lane and unhook but don't hook back the lane divider back, I'm gonna fuck with your hot tub hot off period. So I'm down for the cause. I got your back. If I were there, if the B-man was there at this fitness center, let's say it's LA Fitness, and I was just a bystander by the pool. I saw what this lady did. She broke the code. You do not fuck with the elderly when they're getting their time in their pool. And you got to think, this guy, I think you could ask the question, why is that time an elderly man has in the pool, why is that so sacred? Much more so than everybody else who's not an old hag with scoliosis who uses a pool. And let me tell you why. It's because It's the only moment of solitude that guy has during the week. You think about his life. He's 76. Right? His wife hasn't loved him for 45 years. He's had to wear Depends diapers for the last 10 years. He probably still has not gotten over the fact of his son dying in the Marines when he was on the front lines fighting Iraq during the first invasion. So he's had a rough life. He's dealing with crippling arthritis, and the only comfort he has is that half hour in the pool. And it's not just this guy. It's all the guys. And it's all the ladies who are over 75 years of age who put the swimmies on. And they do the aerobic classes. And they do the laps at a snail's pace. And everything's so slow. But again, because of the buoyancy of the water, it's the only place they can go to escape their arthritis. So for you, this other bitch of a lady, this twat of a lady, this cheese doodle, did not respect that time that this man has in the pool. That's why if I was a bystander there, and I have empathy for the old hag that's doing his laps in the pool, I would join in. I would join in with the fuckery. Right, when this lady went in the hot tub, what I would have done, if the B-man were right there, I would have taken your side and I would have gotten in that hot tub and invaded her personal space. Let's say it's a 10-person round hot tub. I would have sat right next to her, right next to her, and not said anything, just looked straight ahead and just, you know, she can't. She could ask me to move, but technically I'm not doing anything illegal. It's a 10-seater. I take the seat next to you, so I'm not invading your personal space, but I am invading your personal space. And as soon as she closed her eyes, I would have peed right there in my bathing suit and then gotten up and left. And hell, even if she gave me the stink eye while I sat right next to her, once she closed her stink eye, if I was capable of doing so, if I had had a large meal within the last 2 hours previously, I would have taken a number two, where I would have pulled my bathing suit down a little bit, taken a number two, gotten up and left and gone to the showers. Like that's how on your side I am. So it's me, it's a 76-year-old against this lady. What do you all think? Let me know down in the comments. And again, it's something about a fitness center pool that brings out the worst in all of us. And again, there are all these TikTok and social media videos, you know, where guys will get got, a hot babe in her yoga pants, Lululemon, she'll be doing squats or some type of gluteus maximus exercise where they catch us on video staring at their ass. And they're like, why are you staring at me? I'm trying to work out. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you're wearing lingerie doing squats right in front of me. And I'm lifting and I have high testosterone. Can you really blame me for ogling at your backside? Used to be, that's why you're here, right? That's why you're working on those glutes, so that Johns like myself can appreciate the form of your glutes. So you should take that as a compliment. But no, you're trying to shame me for all the internet. And, those videos exist. We've all seen them. What none of us have ever seen, right, is a video of a yoked out, geared out guy, gym bro, staring or causing a scene with an old hag, just brittle old man. Because I don't care you could be the most yoked out 22-year-old, the hottest gym influencer of all time. It don't matter. You see an old guy, he's taking forever on a squat rack, or he's taking space in the pool. We all know you don't fuck with the elderly at the gym. You let them do their thing. You let them take all the time they need because their passive aggressiveness has no limits, and they'll get you. So we all know, just you stay clear of the elderly at the gym until they're done doing whatever exercise it is they're doing there. Because we'll all be there one day, unless we die of cancer or in a car accident or of diabetes or of some type of rare cancer. If you're lucky enough to live that old, you'll be the old hag at the gym. So, what goes around comes around. So respect your elderly, especially if they're in the pool at the gym. Let's go look at some photos. I can't lie. I will not lie. I will not be disingenuous with all nine of you that are watching and or listening to Verbal Graffiti. I had mentioned in the first segment of episode 122 that I am recording a little earlier in the week than I normally do. I usually record late Wednesday nights. I am recording now is a Sunday night because I got that stink on me. I got that ick. I got that weight on my shoulders of bombing on stage. And bomb last night, I did. I'm surprised it wasn't on all the local news. It's just, I performed at this place called the Buttonwood. I'm appreciative of having the opportunity to do so on a Saturday night. I showed up a little late. That's unprofessional of me, but again, I'm the B-man. I knew there were a lot of comics, and I wasn't the headliner, but I was later in the lineup. Anyway, show starts 8:00. I walk in maybe 8:10, and I don't know, maybe there's 6 or 7 comics. I don't recognize any of them. And this is a local show, and I am about as well-known in this scene, the Connecticut, New England comedy. It's just about anybody, right? I know everybody, and everybody knows me. I'm not patting myself on the back here. I'm just a bum comic who refuses to quit. I've been doing it over a decade now. So I know everybody, but apparently I don't. I walked into this room, and it was a full room. I don't know, maybe 25 like audience members, NPCs. And then the 6 or 7 comics, and I was the youngest one. And normally, nowadays, when I'm doing stand-up, if it's a show that's, of high quality, I tend to be one of the elderly statesmen. Hey, this is what it is. Father time gets us all. But I'm there. Immediately, I don't recognize any of these comics. I am the youngest. The comic before me is wearing a blazer with an untucked plaid shirt, a heavyweight guy, he wasn't using the microphone. It was a small room, so he was kind of doing an a cappella spoken word style, and he was just doing very generic material, family, marriage. He did one time, and then he did this joke, and I am shitting on him a little bit for doing so. He did this joke. He said, "Hey, does anyone watch adult films?" He doesn't say porn. I'm not sure if he said adult film, but he says a word other than porn, and the audience goes a little quiet, and then he responds with, Oh, a $6 billion industry, and I'm the only one who watches adult films, and it gets a big laugh. And that is such a hacky, stolen joke that it made me a curmudgeon in that moment. I was like, oh, fuck this audience. They don't know real comedy. And it was pouring rain outside, and there's a window beside the stage so you could hear the rain, and it was an all-white audience, one a mixed couple with a black guy, and I don't know what it was. I was the next comic after him. So I'm hearing him do all this generic material with that the most hackiest of a hacky porn joke, and everything's getting pretty good laughs. Like, he had a pretty good set, right? Which I guess, hey, you got to tip my penis to him for that. But then the host, whoever the fuck he was, called me up. It was Brian Glass, and I get up there, and I start to bomb right away. I don't know. I opened up about peeing into a jug, into a Gatorade bottle, which I do. And then it was just downhill from there. And I wasn't even being that blue or that dirty. What else was I told? Oh, I mentioned BLM. Black Lives Matter, and how I don't see those signs anymore, and how that says more about you if you put the sign out and they took it down if you had rather than not put the sign out at all. And I was kind of doing some social commentary, and I was trying to talk with the audience, and I was getting a lot of sour looks. I call them lemon crowds, which I do get a lot of. They're just like, I get that. Everyone was feeling uncomfortable with the material I was doing, and it wasn't even Like, I wasn't even talking about Mr. Perfect that much. You know, I wasn't even talking about my ball sack. Recently, I've been talking about cupping my ball sack and getting my germs from my penis onto people's hands when I shake their hands for the first time. And I wasn't even being foul. I was just, I just kept going down. I kept digging that hole deeper and deeper. And again, I think I said I was supposed to do 10 minutes. No one gave me a light. So I ended up doing 18 minutes, and it got to a point where the audience, I could tell they had disdain for me. I was making them feel uncomfortable, so they were upset with me, but that upsetness turned into being, like, almost having empathy for me and feeling sad for me. And I'm at the point now in my stand-up career, when it's going bad, like, I'm not trying to get the audience back. Like, if they get back on my side, like, fine, great. Like, we'll cheer that to the high heavens, you know, stairway to heaven. But if I'm not going to lower my comedy and what I believe comedy is to get a laugh from an NPC audience. And I was not giving in to them. I stayed true to myself for those 18 minutes. So in a sense, as I talk this out, I am proud of myself for not giving in and doing generic jokes to get a chuckle, to make myself feel better. No, it's like, fuck you. I'm doing what I do. And if you don't like it, then you don't know what real comedy is. And this audience, they did not know what real comedy is because they didn't laugh at the B-Man. How can you not laugh at the B-Man when I'm talking about roadside memorials? And what else? I don't even remember what it was. And this is fewer than 24 hours ago. What were the bits I was doing? Oh, I was talking about, like, I pull my pants down all the way when I pee or poop. And then I saw a movie where the lady only pulled her pants down, like, to the top of her kneecaps. So I was asking the audience members, like, hey, when you poop, like, how far do you pull your pants down or your undies down? And they weren't really giving it back to me. Like, I like to engage the audience, flirt with the audience. And it was just a whole lot of sourpuss faces. Like, they were not having me. And I don't lash out. I didn't lash out at them. I just continue to do my material. I can continue to try to engage, talk with the audience members. Again, it was a small crowd, so they could see me, I could see them. But I was getting no scratch from them. No scratch. I wasn't able to light that lighter. I wasn't able to light that room on fire. It was just a puddle. It felt like, you know, metaphorically, it was just walking in a puddle and spending the rest of the day having wet socks. Like, that feeling. And it's still, like, all these years later, even when I don't respect the audience, and I respect the audience for being there, I just do not respect their taste of what comedy is. Like even when I don't respect them, like, I still have that, I get that stink, and I get down on myself, and I didn't even go out after that. I just went home and worked on some reels, and I got that stink on me, and I gotta get it off. All right, well, hey, that was my Saturday night. Bombed on stage. I ruined 25 people's their night. That was their night. Saturday night is going out. It's date night. It's, you know, getting a babysitter, paying 20. I can't believe those people paid $20. By the way, if you're just a person who doesn't do stand-up, you should not be having to pay $25 to go see a comedy show that you don't know the names of any of the comics. I almost feel bad. Like, I do. I feel bad for audience members that have to pay $20. That's a lot of money for a comedy show. Because you got to think about, all right, just $20. But if you're bringing a date, that's $40. And if you're buying food, that's upwards of $80. If you're buying a couple of drinks, you're talking about $100-plus night to see, you know, five or six no-name comics. So Personally, I feel comedy shows should be $10 until you're, you know, a comedian with a following. But again, that's why I don't make a lot of money in this industry, because I feel guilty about charging $20 to strangers to come see comedy. But but that was my Saturday night. I ruined the evening, the out night for 25 just, you know, comedy loving civilians across the state of Connecticut. So yeah, some shows you win, some shows we all lose together. And last night I brought us all down. I brought us all down to the depths of no name comedy. And I don't know. It's sometimes, what are they going to say to their coworkers tomorrow? They're going to talk so much shit about me. But again, I'm talking shit about the audience to the internet. So I guess we were even last night in I'm getting even with you, and then you're probably going to get even with me tomorrow morning talking shit to your coworkers about what terrible comedy you saw on Saturday night. All right, let's do something a little bit more uplifting. This one's actually almost makes me feel, makes my insides rumble almost as much as having a lackluster comedy set on a real show. All right, this comes from a subreddit, Stop Drinking. Never. No, stop drinking. Okay. Dumped out a whole bottle of tequila last night after reading your guys' comments on side effects of drinking. I am 23 years old and did not realize how many side effects I already have. The comments I read in this sub encouraged me to dump the remaining liquor I had and get serious about quitting drinking. I'm going to go parent with you on this one. Like, I'm not upset with you. I'm just disappointed in your actions. One time, for the B-man, for all of us drinkers out in the world, can you think of us rather than yourself and your health all the time? Stop being so selfish. I get it. I understand. I've been there. We've all been in this situation. Anybody who's done any kind of binge drinking, whether it was in high school, college, or you start late in your 30s or beyond, we've all been there. In that situation, you are right that morning, that afternoon when you wrote this post. Right? You go out, you have a rager. You wake up with a raging, throbbing, you know, 7.7 on the Richter scale, an earthquake, a headache. It is this boom, 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 boom. You know, a cartoon, Looney Tune type heart just pounding. And your stomach feels like Chernobyl. And you're hugging the toilet. And the sunlight is kryptonite to you. And you're laying there in bed. Maybe there's some puke beside you. And there's some blood coming from your elbow. And you don't remember how you got that bruise on your kneecap. And you have one sneaker that's still on. How was I so fucked up? I didn't take both of my sneakers off. Like, how fucked up do you have to be to be that fucked up? But you are that fucked up, and you're laying there, and you got the sweats, and you're there, and we've all been there. We've all been there. You feel like death. You know, you feel like Jon Snow, the first time he died. And you're just there, and you're just, never again am I going to drink. Well, son, I'm here to tell you, I've been there. We've all been there. We've all been 23. You're 23. This ain't the first time, and this won't be the last time you quit drinking or start getting serious about quitting drinking. And those side effects you're having, the body is amazing. And when I say body, I just mean all of our bodies. You know, we commit cruelty to our bodies, but it's able to absorb what we put in and what we do to our bodies and keep coming back. And you're 23. So I believe you have another good decade of drinking before you have to start worrying about, how swollen your liver is and the side effects of drinking and the weight gain and the shame. But you got to think about your fellow drinker before you dump out your bottle of tequila. I've been there. I've been in that situation. But again, I was young and immature, and I didn't know any better. And then that's the same predicament you find yourself in. You're 23, you dump out the bottle. Well, hey, son, right? If you're going to waste your life deciding you're not going to get wasted ever again, maybe don't waste the bottle of tequila that you paid good money for. How about you take that bottle of tequila that you spent, I don't know, $50 on maybe, and give it to a friend of yours who hasn't given up on life yet? Because giving up drinking, that's essentially what you're doing, is you're giving up on life. You're giving up on having a social life. You're giving up on being fun. You're giving up on being a joy to be with. You're giving up on having sex with fatties. You're giving up on being part of the nightlife. You're giving up on the debauchery that makes life worth living. It's those debaucheries that you encounter when you're drunk that gives you stories that you'll remember for decades. And you and your friends on your group text, you'll laugh about forever. But you're giving that all up because you've given up drinking, because you're too worried about the side effects. How about you stop being a pussy? Huh? Stop being a pussy, because this is what's going to happen. You'll pour it out that bottle. Guess what? A week, two, maybe a month from now, that fatty who you used to have sex with when you were inebriated, she's going to hit you up. Maybe it's going to be a 4th of July, or it's going to be a friend's birthday party, or it's going to be a holiday, or you're going to go to a bachelor party, or the boys, they're going to hit you up. Like, there's going to be an incident. There's going to be a person or an event that's going to reel you back in, as they should. Because living a life of inebriation is a life worth living. So your friends, or the fatty, or the family member, the uncle that tries to bring you back onto the wagon, they're doing it because they're looking out for you and your happiness. And the hangovers are short-lasting. The drinking, that's a lifestyle worth living. So I'm just upset. Like, that bottle that you poured out. And again, I've been there. I keep saying this. I've been there. There have been times, multiple times, where I've woken up, same headache, the same haze you have, the heaviness in the eyes, and I poured it. I open up the bottle, I take the cap off the Smirnoff vodka, and I pour it out. And I dump out the bottle. Never again. Never again. There have been times when it's been fewer than 5 days before I went back to the package store and bought myself another bottle of Smirnoff. So next time, what I'm getting at here is, next time you quit drinking, and there will be another time when you're still spry, you're 23, you're going to drink again. So next time you drink and quit, and you're a pussy, you say you quit, take whatever tequila you have left. Give it to a friend of yours that has not given up on having a joyful life, that still enjoys the taste and that the warmth and the burn as the tequila goes down his throat. Give the bottle that you bought to him. Or maybe you know somebody in the neighborhood in which you live who currently has a DUI. Right? How about you leave the bottle on his doorstep? Right? I mean, think of it as goodwill. All right, you have a jacket. Nobody throws a jacket out. As long as there's not huge holes in it, you give it to Goodwill. Think of a bottle of tequila or a bottle of liquor after that's still full after you've decided to quit drinking. Consider that's like Goodwill for somebody with a swollen liver. All right, you go give that bottle to that person instead of dumping it down the drain and wasting a bottle that could get somebody drunk. I'm just so disappointed in you. Yeah, of course. Oh, the side effects. You're 23. Oh, are you going to be sober for the next 70 years? Do you see what's going down in the world? How can you get through this world, this life, being sober, waking up and remembering everything you did the previous day? That's not a life worth living. Get back to the bottle. Get back to the party. Get back on the wagon. I feel like we've lost a soldier. All right? I don't know you, but your friends, they've lost a good man. At least I thought you were a good man. All right? All right? Get over this hangover. You know, do a few laps, lift a few weights, you know, lose a few IBs, and then get back to it. That's what we all do. We all say, never, never again. Only to be back on the beach drinking a tall boy. What, 48 hours later? Get back in the game. I don't want to be disappointed with you anymore. All right. That's just anyone who says they're quitting drinking at 23, can just get the fuck out of here, right? I might be an old man right now saying this, but you will. You will for sure drink again. And not only will you drink, you will drink to the point of blackout. And when you do, I tip of my penis to you. That means you're living. And there's nothing I like more than somebody that's living life. All right, let's continue reading A Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence, who never gave up drinking. We are on the top of page 115. We will continue reading two pages together aloud. Yes, son, he groaned excellently. Fuck her good. Fuck her good, son. Pamela was stunned. His son, she thought in terror. It can't be. I must be hearing things. Surely this man can't be his son. That would be horrible, to be taken this way by father and son. But her tormented mind refused to grasp such terrible idea, and so she forced it from her thoughts, assuming she hadn't heard correctly, and once again gave herself completely to the vulgar melee. Instantly she was transported in an ocean of bliss. Pain no longer racked her body, for now she had experienced an overwhelming, effervescent pleasure that bubbled to every part of her. Oh, Christ! Christ! Garrett groaned as he bucked and churned his giant cock, slipping and sliding, impaling her hotly clasping pussy with new determination. He grunted and groaned, knowing his orgasm was not far off. Carlsberg plowed wildly in between her roundly strained buttocks and felt bubbling cum churning with aching urgency in his bouncing, hairy balls. Sensing that, his son was near release also. The heartbeats pounded like thunder. The entire room seemed to quake furiously. Pamela felt the two men increase their savage fucking, and as they did, her loins began to gush with hot, radiant sparks. In an instant, she knew that not only were the two males near climax, but she also was about to experience her own pinnacle of pleasure. Ah! She cried urgently. Ah-hee! Her raven hair flew from side to side as her head flailed wildly, covering Garrett's flushed face with its soft curls. She bucked and churned, groaning incoherently as the intensity of excitement increased to unbelievable proportions. The two men, overwhelmed by her eager response, squeezed and fingered her tender, dampened flesh as their climax rose with savage force. Suddenly, Garrett cried out as his body stiffened momentarily, and at that moment, hot jets of cum shot out of his convulsing cock and burst directly against Pamela's quivering cervix. Carlsberg, too, knew his moment was at hand. He screamed violently and then released wave after wave of his thick, boiling liquid deep into the burning channel of her bowels. His hairy ball smacked hard against the underside of her soft nether cheeks as he gushed forth his bubbling, scalding fluid. Four hands grappled with her trembling breast, then gripped her quaking buttocks as the two men struggled completely to drain themselves into the groaning young female. Go suck a fat one.